the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. Everything's back to normal. That's the sunny outlook from New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg after last week's massive power blackout. Bloomberg says he was confident at the beginning of the outage that it was not related to terrorism.
It was not. It was the kind of industrial mistakes or accidents that are preventable and that are part of modern life, unfortunately.
Bloomberg was on NBC's Today Show. Meanwhile, as the investigation into what caused last week's massive blackout continues, Ohio-based First Energy is on the defensive. Executives admit there were anomalies in the company's power grid just prior to the huge outage. Former Energy Secretary Bill Richardson and Governor of New Mexico said the Republican-controlled Congress needs to get more involved in regulating energy issues.
There are turf fights. Nobody works together. This is why action in the Congress, where there's some kind of a federal role in setting rules of the road, needs to happen. Okay. And it's not happening.
While the blackout in the Northeast may be over, there's another power shortage taking hold in the Southeast. Hundreds of gas stations throughout Phoenix, Arizona have run out of gas. Those gas stations that do have fuel have lines around them reminiscent of the 1970s gas crisis. The Arizona Republic reports the cause of the gas crunch is a rupture in a gas pipeline between El Paso, Texas, and Phoenix. Law enforcement officials throughout West Virginia are on the lookout for a serial sniper. Three people have been shot dead over the past week. One law enforcement official says the shooter tends to target people who are alone and at locations where it's easy to make a quick getaway. Authorities still weren't sure if one person is responsible for the shootings. On Wall Street this hour, the Dow is up 33 points, the Nasdaq up 10 points, and the S&P up 4 points.
You know, MTV changed the way people look at television. Well, I helped change the way they look at MTV. I'm Lauren Lazen, Vice President of MTV News and Specials. I'm responsible for those documentaries on racism and drugs, sexual abuse and AIDS. You know, the ones that make some people uncomfortable, but make everybody think. I'm not uncomfortable speaking up for my ideas. Never have been. Even in school, where it wasn't always cool for a girl to be smart, my parents expected great things from me, so I did too. If you have a daughter, encourage her to stand up and be heard in school. Let her know it's cool to be smart, even in front of boys. Tell her to go for it, and then let her. Expect the best from a girl. That's what you'll get.
Help your daughter speak up for her ideas in school. Call 1-800-WCC-4GIRLS. This message brought to you by the Ad Council and the Women's College Coalition.
A U.S.-based group is calling for a full investigation into the shooting death of a Reuters cameraman in Iraq. 43-year-old Mazan Dana was shot to death by U.S. troops as he was filming outside a prison in western Baghdad. A close friend of the cameraman was there.
I saw Mazan. He screamed one time and he was putting his hand on his chest and fall down on the ground. And start screaming on him, you know. I saw him bleeding.
Soldiers apparently thought Dana's camera was a rocket-propelled grenade launcher.
Hey, Mom, here's some good news. Tax rebate checks are here just in time for back-to-school shopping. And Sears will cash your tax rebate check free of charge with any purchase. Here's some more good news. Right now, during the Sears Great 3-Day Sale, save 50% on great back-to-school items throughout the store. Plus, all jeans are on sale. Brands like Levi's, Lee, Cannon River Blues, LEI, Bongo, and Mud. So hurry in now through Saturday. You don't want to miss the Great 3-Day Sale. 3-day sale ends August 16th. All jeans on sale through August 30th. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Sears. Good life. Great price.
Indonesia has been given access to detain terror suspect Hambali. Indonesia's foreign minister says the country's intelligence agency has been in close contact with their American counterparts over the matter.
Our police and intelligence agencies have been in close contact with their counterparts. For that matter, I believe some information have been shared with us. We have access.
The Indonesian-born man is blamed for last year's Bali bombing that killed 202 people. A decision on Pete Rose's reinstatement to baseball could come after Major League Baseball's postseason play. The Cincinnati Inquirer is quoting Hall of Fame player Mike Schmidt as saying Major League Baseball Commissioner Bud Selig will not make a decision on the Rose case until after the World Series. Rose was banned from Major League Baseball in 1991 and placed on the permanent ineligible list. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this This is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Lycus with another Car Clinic Minute. A Ragtop Day is my favorite road trip tune. But before you put your convertible top down, you should know how to keep it up. When I come back, I'll give you the buzz. I'm Bobby Lycus on the street, talking to people who love their cars. Excuse me, sir, you're putting a car cover on your vehicle?
You bet. I protect my car outside from the weather with a car cover, and from dings and dust when it's inside the garage.
Is it easy to put on?
Easy to put on and take off.
What's it made of?
Blockit Fabric by Kimberly Clark. Great protection at a great value.
Take it from people who love their cars. Buy a car cover made from Blockit Fabric by Kimberly Clark. Roger Maharis did it on Route 66, and Jimmy Buffett perfected it on A1A. I'm talking about cruising with a top down, the perfect summer sport. For a major league convertible top, bathe it with car wash, never detergent. Use a soft cloth or sponge, except for plastic rear windows. They're so pliable that even a sponge will scratch. And save your elbow grease for your car. Waxing vinyl will dry it out. Instead, use a vinyl protectant. Now you're ready for championship cruising. I'm Bobby Lycus. Lycus, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on this beautiful Monday. The liberty of democracy, Franklin Delano Roosevelt said, is not safe if the people tolerate the growth of private power to a point where it becomes stronger than their democratic state itself. That, Roosevelt said, in its essence, is fascism. Ownership of government by an individual, by a group, or by any controlling private power, end quote. It's also what the proponents of deregulation are proposing for our commons, those things that we own in common, those things that we rely upon in common. And if anybody in 2003, on this Monday, August 18th, day 190 in the search for weapons of mass destruction, day 706 of the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush. Of course, Bush has only held, what, a half a dozen or so news conferences, whereas his daddy had held 60 by this point in his presidency. But in any case, that is not an issue that the folks who are proposing deregulation would agree with, that our electricity is part of our commons. I mean, how can anybody in this day and age, having gone through what we went through last weekend, say that the electric distribution system is not rightfully and properly part of the commons of the United States, that we, the people, should play some role in it? And you'll notice how the cons are spinning this. They're trying to have it both ways. On the one hand, they're saying, we just need to get government out of the way. Government shouldn't have anything to do with it. The problem is that the transmission towers weren't deregulated, although production and sale was. Well, it's not actually true. The watchdog agency that overlooks transmission lines that was created back, I'll have the years for you in our third hour when we get into this, what's the real cause of the Northeast blackout. That agency's recommendations are purely recommendations. It has no legal authority. In fact, its head is asking for legal authority now, but it doesn't have it. So on the one hand, they're saying, well, it's because of regulation. Turns out it's not because of regulation. And the solution is more deregulation. Well, it's deregulation clearly that got us into this mess, because for predictable reasons, if you've got a corporation whose mandate is to make money, they're going to spend more time and effort on making money than if you have a nonprofit organization or a government agency whose mandate is to provide electric power. It's very simple. This is not rocket science, although the cons would have you think it is. They would love to confuse the issue to the point where people can't figure out which way is up. But this is simple logic, folks. This is absolutely simple, straightforward stuff. For our show today, in our first hour, we're going to be asking, should we be using Interpol or nuclear weapons to go after terrorists? And we're going to have on a fellow briefly at the bottom of the hour from the Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation being that group that receives money from Northrop Grumman, which makes the B-2 stealth bomber and is trying to modernize long-range bombers. And Northrop also would benefit the most from funding for tactical nuclear weapons. And this guy is going to try and tell us how, if we want to fight terrorism, we have to have modernization of the long-range bomber program and tactical nuclear weapons. Surprise, surprise! What does this mean for me? What does this mean for you? What's the bottom line of this? Well, what you're going to hear is a little bit of right-wing spin about, or con spin, actually. I'm not even sure that it's fair to call these guys right-wingers. That the solution to the problem is to give more money to the largest defense contractors and to turn this into a very, very profitable for the Carlyle Group and the other defense contractors war, when in fact it is a crime. This is a crime. The 9/11, Osama bin Laden, these guys are thugs and criminals. They are not noble warriors against whom we should be declaring war. I mean, if you want, you could stretch it and say that the Taliban in Afghanistan were harboring them and refused to turn them over to us, although even that starts to break down when you actually go back and read the history, that the Taliban was willing to turn Osama bin Laden over to any country, any Arab country, and they were willing to do it under fairly liberal terms. And odds are, if he had been turned over to Saudi Arabia or Kuwait or Bahrain or something like that, he would have been executed. And his group would have disintegrated and you know, that case closed. But no, we turned this into a war, and now we have Afghanistan preparing to produce the largest opium supply not just in the history of Afghanistan, in the history of the planet. And we have terrorists going nuts in Iraq. We've got our soldiers dying. We've got this absolute mess that this administration has brought us with their fantasy idea that they could turn George W. into a warrior president. Landing on aircraft carriers, show what a great soldier and warrior this guy was, and it would just ensure that he was reelected in 2004. I am telling you, this reelection strategy for 2004 for George W. Bush began the day he went into the White House. It began in big, writ large, fast and large, in the first few months of his administration, when Dick Cheney met in secret with the oil industry and the coal industry to plan our national energy strategy and started carving up the country of Iraq. Here's where it gets really interesting. You know, on Friday, the most famous of the right-wing con talk show hosts was going on and on about how they're trying to sue Dick Cheney now about his energy policy. This is a matter of left-right, folks. This is the left is trying to sue him. Now, it turns out, sorry to puncture your bubble, Rush, but it turns out that it was Judicial Watch that sued Dick Cheney over his energy meeting. Judicial Watch, the group that sued over the Jennifer Flowers case that turned into the Monica Lewinsky case that led to the impeachment of Bill Clinton, run by Larry Clements, the notorious conservative. Judicial Watch, a conservative, an ultra-conservative group, is who is suing Dick Cheney. And successfully. And they got these first three documents showing that back before 9/11, Cheney and these oil barons were carving up Iraq. Carving up Iraq, trying to figure out who was going to buy the oil. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. The Democratic National Committee sent out, finally these guys are getting some backbone. You know, I get these news releases from the Republicans every week. I've pretty much stopped reading them. Maybe we'll go back to it. I'm getting daily alerts from the groups that are looking for liberal bias in the media. And mostly they are so comical and so sad and so pathetic that they're not even worth sharing with you. I mean, as high comedy or, hey, this is what the right is up to, because they're just a joke. And so often the Republican stuff is so absolutely inconsistent with reality. But the Democrats finally, it appears, have gotten some spine. And Friday they sent out this thing, Washington Post exposes White House deceptions. And a report came out of a verbatim quote from George Bush. A report came out from the International Atomic Energy Agency that the Iraqis were 6 months away from developing a weapon. I don't know what more evidence we need. This was on 9702 from Camp David. The Washington Post, at the same time, runs an article. There was no new IAEA report. Bush cast as president evidence the contents of a report from 1996, updated in 1998, 1999. In those accounts, the IAEA described the history of an Iraqi nuclear weapons program that arms inspectors had systematically destroyed. End of quote. So that'll be our Bush lie for the day. If you'd like to be on the radio program today, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. And Tim in Tennessee is on the line. Welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I am well. How are you? Is it Tim or Jim?
Jim.
Jim. I'm sorry, Jim. Didn't quite catch that.
What's up? I was looking at Common Dreams this morning. There's a very good article on there that might be of interest to a lot of your listeners. Mm-hmm. About how Arnold, Mr. Kenny Boy Lay, and Dick Reardon, and a bunch of these people got together back a couple of years ago. And the article, the thrust of it is they contrived this entire energy crisis and laid it on the shoulders of Gray Davis. And if you'll remember, Gray Davis met with George, and George refused any financial help at all. And
it wasn't just financial help. Gray Davis was asking George to stop his Texas oil baron buddies and energy energy companies from raping the state, essentially.
That's
and
right.
Bush said, "Well, with a problem with these guys, they just need more deregulation."
But go on that Common Dreams and look at that article. It's a fairly long article, but it's. Gives a little insight to what's really going on in California right now. And
I agree, Jim.
I appreciate your show.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for calling. Jim, I absolutely agree with you. I actually read that article this morning, and it's in my stack of stuff here to get to, although it's down a ways. I don't know. I didn't figure I'd have time to get to it today. And the reason why is because the article raises questions, but it doesn't quite offer the smoking gun. The fact that Arnold was in a private secret meeting with Ken Lay and some of these other guys, you know, implies something. And you line up the facts, and it certainly looks like maybe he knew what was going on. It could, however, have simply been a fundraising hustle. I think that. Maybe I need to read the article again more carefully, but I actually did read that thing this morning. It's one of the things we do in the morning when we're doing show prep is read Common Dreams. And my sense of it was that there could have been other explanations. But to say that 3 years ago, or 2.5 years ago, Arnold was plotting with these guys to bring down Gray Davis, I would hate to believe that. I mean, if it turns out that that's true, and I hope somebody does the follow-up on this, then this out Machiavellians anything Karl Rove or the former pesticide applicator, former exterminator Tom DeLay could ever have thought up, and may well, in fact, even be a crime, an effort to subvert democracy, in my humble opinion. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Business Trip by Super 8 Motels.
Somewhere between the last meeting and home, between four drive-thrus and the blob of ketchup on your favorite tie, between 60 dead bugs on your windshield and a wiper blade gone awry, somewhere between where you are and where you're going, there's a Super 8. See you along the way.
All Super 8 motels are individually owned and operated.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into Tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of years without cries. Now I want to understand.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Broadcasting live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network. Also, we're broadcasting at radiopower.org on the Internet, iamericaradio.com, live365.com, with archives at whiterosesociety.com. And for those of you who are listening on the web, on Friday, we were broadcasting live coast-to-coast on radio stations, had a great show, lots of callers from all over the country, and those on the web couldn't hear the show. And I am hoping that that archive, we got that together on Saturday and posted it to Ben at White Rose Society, and hopefully he'll put that up on his site for those who want to hear it. The Red Army faction, when Tim McVeigh blew up the Oklahoma City Federal Building, as predicted slash suggested in the Turner Diaries, which is a novel that had become Tim McVeigh's Bible, which is a story about a bunch of white Anglo-Saxon Protestants inciting a race war in America by blowing up a federal building. The federal government over-responds. Now, actually, think about this for a minute. In the Turner Diaries, which is a terribly badly written novel, but it's an interesting read to get inside the mindset of these people. And I read it right after the Oklahoma City bombing happened, because I was curious about, what would motivate somebody to do this. And the word was out that this was McVeigh's Bible. And basically in the story, you've got a bunch of guys who are convinced that the Jews are running the world, that the Catholics are an evil force, that minorities, particularly blacks and Hispanics, are destroying America genetically, they're just your garden variety white racist, white supremacist wackos. And although they're portrayed in the novel, of course, as the heroes, and sort of the way Ayn Rand portrays entrepreneurs as heroes in Atlas Shrugged. With the same blind, loving, ignore all other dimensions of reality passion. And one of these guys gets together, a couple of them get together, and they go out and they decide that they're going to confront the United States government in a way that will force it to respond with an excessive response. And so they blow up the federal building in Oklahoma City, in the novel. And the government declares war on these white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, these Christian fundamentalists. And the rest of America is so horrified by this war that is declared against them that a popular uprising all across America happens of white Protestants pulling their guns out of their closet and going out and killing Jews, Catholics, blacks, Hispanics, and in particular, government bureaucrats. And this was the vision of Tim McVeigh. This was also the vision of Osama bin Laden. These guys were both criminals, bums. They were both criminals who had this bizarre notion that they could stimulate the United States to declare war on them and thus mobilize on their side a whole bunch of people who would say, oh, there's a war going on? I guess I have to take sides. Whose side shall I be on? The nasty government, in the case of Tim McVeigh's world, the nasty government or the side of the good white guys? And in the side of Osama bin Laden's world, it was, which side shall I be on? The nasty Americans or the entire Arab world of over a billion Muslims? And bin Laden figured if he could provoke the United States into a violent reaction that looked like it was anti-Islam, the Arab world would unite behind him. And it looks like McVeigh was wrong, because Bill Clinton didn't swallow that. But bin Laden was right, because George Bush played right into his hand. Should we be using Interpol or nuclear weapons to go after terrorists? This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Employees of the Canadian federal government were angry when lawmakers earlier this year voted to spend $14 billion of their surplus pension fund money to reduce the federal deficit. Lawsuits were filed to challenge the move, and the case is currently in the discovery process. The Public Service Alliance of Canada says the records show the government's been using tricks of accounting to have pension money cover each part of the federal deficit since 1995. This means the government's been chronically underpaying into the fund of its workers for at least 8 years. This appears to be just the tip of the iceberg, too, as the case isn't scheduled for trial until late next year at the earliest.
At the Kia Motors plant outside of Seoul, Korea these days, you're more likely to find a friendly game of soccer than an assembly line in full swing. 25,000 Kia workers are on strike, demanding a 5-day work week, profit sharing and year-end bonuses, and an 11% wage increase. Assembly line worker Pei Kun Kyu says he'd welcome a boost in pay, but is more concerned with winning a greater say in car development, something he sees as key to job security.
In the car cycle, if the company can't sell cars, few people can buy the cars. The management can easily fire workers. This is what I'm concerned about. So even though I may get more money, what's most important for me is the employee stabilization.
Kia workers are eyeing the recent successful strike of their counterparts at Hyundai Motors, who won big wage increases, a 5-day work week, and a say in the management of their company. Kia reported record sales in July, but the strike has disrupted the production of some 23,000 cars.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Ostrich.
Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Come play about.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, my blood's so mad, feels like coagulating. I'm sitting here just contemplating. A cat with the truth, it knows no regulation. Handful of senators don't pass legislation, and marches alone can't bring innovation. When human respect is disintegrating, this whole crazy world is just too frustrating. And you tell me over and over and over again, my friend, I don't believe we're on the eve of destruction.
Is it the eve of destruction? Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations from California to Alabama, North Carolina, all over the place. And let's see, Baghdad slum that gave a joyous welcome to U.S. troops after Saddam Hussein's fall is now seething in anger at the occupiers' shortcomings, according to MSNBC. I'm wondering What good would nuclear weapons do in this kind of case? We have Jack Spencer on the line. Jack is a defense and national security policy analyst for the Heritage Foundation. He works primarily on issues involving military readiness, force structure, roles and missions, information warfare, policies related to homeland security, and missile defense. He's authored the Ballistic Missile Threat Handbook, along with numerous papers and articles on missile defense, modernization, readiness, and other national security issues. Jack, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Great to be here.
Hey, I'm glad you could show up. Jack, should we be using Interpol or nuclear weapons to go after terrorists?
Interpol or nuclear weapons? So I think that Interpol, to the extent that that is a useful tool, nuclear weapons, to the extent they are useful tools, I would say, though, that probably nuclear weapons don't have much utility in fighting terrorism.
They don't. Okay. My understanding was that your position and your writings were that we needed to be developing tactical nuclear weapons and enhancing our long-term bomber strategies and things as part of the war on terrorism.
Oh, certainly I think that we need to have an updated, modernized nuclear force structure that is consistent with the requirements of today. That would hold true for tactical nuclear weapons or bombers. But you asked about the war on terrorism. I don't know what utility nuclear weapons have in fighting terrorism, per se. Now, if you're talking about achieving deterrence in a very different world than what our nuclear force structure was developed for. If you're talking about deterring the Kim Jong-ils of the world or whoever the next rogue leader
China,
that gets close to having
Taiwan.
A nuclear weapon might be, then sure, nuclear weapons in terms of deterrence absolutely have a critical role to play.
Yeah. Or what do you see going on with China and Taiwan here?
China wants Taiwan to be part of that country, and Taiwan wants to maintain its freedom. We, the United States, have a long-standing relationship with Taiwan, and I think have a lot of interest in ensuring that that problem is resolved peacefully, and it's our commitment to Taiwan, I think, that will bring about long-term, sustainable, peaceful resolution of that problem.
Yeah. Are you suggesting that the reason why we should be going to small-scale tactical nuclear weapons and presumably dismantling some of these large nukes that we have previously pointed at the former Soviet Union is because, for example, with Kim Jong-il, if we wanted to use a nuclear weapon in North Korea, all we have right now is such a sledgehammer it would take out half of China, too?
Well, actually, we have a lot of tactical nuclear weapons right now. We have tens of thousands of them. But they're not really in the strategic calculation when we come up with deterrence strategy. And essentially what you described is what I do believe. I think that if we are attempting to deter a Kim Jong-il or someone like that from acting and from using a nuclear weapon themselves, it's very difficult to do so when our only threat is that these large, many hundred kiloton nuclear weapons that were developed for the Soviet Union. The threat just simply is not credible. Instead, what I believe we need to do is to have a more flexible deterrent posture, one that doesn't only rely on nuclear weapons, by the way, but one that brings in a host of things, defense, offense, conventional, non-conventional means. In the world we live in, where it's really difficult to predict where the next threat may come from, but certainly we know that these weapons are proliferating, I think it's in our interest, not only in our interest, but in the world's interest, for the United States and also the rest of the peace-loving countries to come up with a flexible strategy that can really respond to any host of different kinds of threats that may emerge.
Well, if you want to go into North Korea with relatively small bombs that aren't going to take out Seoul at the same time you're taking out Pyongyang, why not go in with conventional weapons?
Well, you're suggesting that you're going in with things. I believe that you build a military so you don't have to use it, and that you build nuclear weapons so that you don't have to use them.
So you're an advocate of MAD?
I'm an advocate of deterrence. No, not MAD at all. Mutual Assured Destruction argues that if both sides are completely able to destroy the other, neither side will act belligerently. The problem with that is if it fails, there's no backup plan. MAD is not flexible at all. It requires one force posture, and that's what you stick with and pray to God that it works. I would argue to have a much more flexible deterrent policy.
Yeah. Would you then agree that for example, in the week after 9/11, many newspapers around the world, probably one of the most articulate was The Observer in London, published editorials suggesting that the United States had, at that moment, the love and support of the world, as it were. I mean, a million people marched in the streets of Iran in support of the United States right after 9/11. I mean, half a million marched in the streets of Iraq right after 9/11. And these newspapers were suggesting, and many policy analysts and foreign affairs specialists were suggesting that we should then, at that moment, consider Osama the same way that we considered Timothy McVeigh, a criminal. And we should pursue him with the criminal justice system, the international criminal justice system, absolutely relentlessly. But that it would be a horrible mistake if we played the game that Osama wanted us to play and try to turn this into a war that would then cause people in the Muslim world to say, oh, there's a war going on, we need to take sides, as opposed to, oh, he's a criminal, you know, there's a bounty for him, let's turn him in kind of thing, and that the Bush administration has just played into the hands of Osama bin Laden in this case, whereas the Clinton administration refused to play into the hands of Tim McVeigh and didn't play out the Turner Diaries scenario that McVeigh was hoping for.
No, that would have been a perpetuation of the status quo. I would argue that the Clinton administration did exactly what you just suggested. After attack,
with Tim McVeigh?
With Osama bin Laden. What happened on September the 11th was not the first time that he attacked. It was probably about the 10th time that he attacked the United States. And up until September the 11th, we considered it a legal problem because terrorism has traditionally fallen into the legal system. What was different about September the 11th, and what I would argue is different about Osama bin Laden, is that these are not the actions of just a single individual. That's why, from my perspective, getting Osama bin Laden is not the solution to the problem, but it's breaking apart the terrorist network that is the problem. And to do that, it is a war. Now, is it a war in the traditional state-to-state sense? Absolutely not. Nor is it a criminal activity in the traditional sense. Instead, it's something in between, something that requires a new kind of response, and that's what we're trying to figure out right now. How do we approach this transnational threat that has been given rise because of the technological capabilities that we as individuals in the global community have access to? So is it a traditional war? Absolutely not. Nor is it a traditional criminal activity. So it's something in between, and that's what the war on terrorism is all about.
But why use the word war then? What the word war, first of all, is not working. We're seeing an increase in terrorist activity. You know, I mean, Al-Qaeda is recruiting like crazy on the back of this. I mean,
and where did you get that information? I've not heard that.
Well, it's all over the place. I mean, look what's happening in the Philippines.
I see the news every day that we are getting the Hanbalis, the Khalid Sheikh Mohammeds, that Osama is on the run. I haven't seen this information that that Al-Qaeda is spreading and becoming more.
I'm seeing pictures of 15-year-old kids in downtown Bangkok wearing T-shirts with Osama's picture on the back.
We've seen for 20 years kids throughout the world wearing Che Guevara T-shirts. That's nothing new. That's simply a statement of rebellious youth.
So you think that that we're being successful?
Oh, I think there's no question but that we're being successful. Whenever we get the main characters in this war, whenever there's not been a major attack on the United States, when we are getting the Khalid Sheikh Mohammeds and the Hanbalis, and Afghanistan is not under Taliban rule anymore and on its way to something better than that, when Saddam Hussein is no longer torturing people and developing weapons of mass destruction, I think those are all big steps forward, absolutely.
Okay, great. Jack, one last question. The Heritage Foundation is funded in large part by Northrop Grumman, which manufactures...
Again, you're getting a lot of information that I'm not aware of. Where did you get that from? We're actually funded by about 200,000 individual donors, private individuals, across the country. And now I'm the defense analyst here. I'm not in the development section, but I think that we have somewhere between 4 and 6% of our total funding comes from corporations. And of that, I don't know what percentage of that 4% or so comes from Northrop Grumman. But I'd be happy to answer the rest of your question. I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, it's quite all right. Are you familiar with the Frank Gaffney Center for Security Policy?
Yes, I am.
And do you agree that their largest donors include Raytheon, Lockheed, and Boeing?
Oh, as little as I know about our development, I certainly don't have anything to do with Mr. Gaffney.
This isn't your shtick.
It certainly would be a question for him.
Okay, well, I was just wondering because the president of the Heritage Foundation sits on the board of that. John in Long Beach is on the line here. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. John in Long Beach has a question for you. John, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Again. First of all, this idea that you want to make more and more nuclear weapons, regardless of the size, it's insane. We got enough radiation going on now because of the depleted uranium shells in Iraq. The United States is the country that poses the biggest threat to world peace. We're being terrorists. Our country is, and I hate to see it. And people like this guy that from the Heritage Foundation in Izzy, that place, they should shut it down. I'm just okay. Too mad to talk right now, but that's
okay,
that's
John.
Good for right now.
Thank you, John. I think I got the drift of what you're saying. Jack, we need to wrap this up, but how can you suggest I'm just boggled that you're asserting that things are going well when it seems to me like Iraq is just melting. I mean, prominent Iraqis who despise Saddam Hussein will take up arms against U.S. forces. Again,
I'm not aware of that. You're getting information from different places than me. Because to me,
I see that the
resistance
Star.
Is largely those who are for Saddam Hussein. The large majority of Iraqis, they don't want American occupation, but they're not taking up arms against the United States. And for the most part, we are actually working hand in hand with the Iraqis to move them forward. That's not to say there aren't pockets of resistance who aren't doing things to make things very difficult, such as blowing up water facilities and oil pipelines. But, that's to be expected. The coalition in Iraq is moving forward. And I think that out of this what seems to be chaos, I think the future will be very good for Iraq and the world.
And this is all to be expected. This is what was planned and predicted in the beginning?
Well, I don't know that anyone, largely, at least if that's not what was planned and predicted, the people running the operation weren't very smart, and I don't think that's the case. Anytime you have a wartime situation where a regime has changed, be it Nazi Germany or Ba'athist Iraq, the immediate months afterwards are always plagued by these acts of violence and people trying to thwart the effort. So historically speaking, this is exactly what has happened in the past.
Okay. Jack Spencer of the Heritage Foundation. Jack, thanks a lot for being on the program today.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. It is really very difficult to have a discussion with somebody when you say ABC and they go, no, it's not ABC. Things aren't going well in Iraq. No, things are going just fine. There's terrorists in Iraq. No, there's not. It's like, what? I'm sorry, folks, I just... There are limits to my credulity and my willingness to listen to this. The Baghdad slum that gave a joyous welcome to U.S. troops after Saddam Hussein's fall is now seething in anger at the occupiers' shortcomings from today's MSNBC. The sight of cheering Iraqis in the long-oppressed Shiite Muslim community was a big psychological boost for Americans, but now they face daily protests from among the 2 million residents as growing resentment at the occupation turned into open fury when a helicopter knocked down a flag last week. And in the midst of this, as the hunt for Saddam Hussein grows more urgent and the guerrilla war in Iraq shows little sign of abating, this in the Boston Globe, the Bush administration is continuing to shift highly specialized intelligence officers from the hunt for al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan to the Iraq crisis, according to intelligence officials. How are our tactical nuclear weapons going to help this? The terror groups are seen as back inside Iran. This in the New York Times. The intelligence suggests that Ansar al-Insam, Islam is planning large-scale terrorist attacks here, said Mr. Bremer. We have seen a new technique for Iraq that we have never seen before, Mr. Bremer said, referring to the car bomb used in the attack. And it's like we invited these guys in. This is absolutely incredible. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. We're going to a break in just a moment here. We've got a caller in North Carolina. I'm going to pick you up when we come back on the other side of the break, if that's okay with you. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America radio network. Our question for this hour, should we be using Interpol or nuclear weapons to go after terrorists? I think a better way to frame this is, are we in a war against terrorists, or are there criminals out there that need to be arrested, prosecuted in a world court, and that be the end of it, as the Germans did with their terrorists, as the Italians did with their terrorists, as Greece did with November 17 terrorist group. I mean, over and over and over again, we've seen these situations. Oh, there it is, where we've dealt with these people as criminals rather than as an army, and the result has been that we've wiped them out. This is Tom Hartman on IE Talk Radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Nice drive, Jim.
Ah, thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
John, there's something I must tell you. I want to be free.
Oh, Helen, you want to be free with the wind in your hair, life without care?
No, I want to be free of those overnight laxatives that give me cramps.
You want Freelax, the only overnight laxative that gives you stimulant-free, cramp-free relief in just two caplets.
Oh, John, I just wish everything could be that dependable.
Freelax is the free of everything you hate about laxatives. Laxative, look for it in the bright green box. Use only as directed.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country
back. What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do? Being on the tractor as much time as I do or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the problem. Primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briar.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All the love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Mulder.
my show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who had more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to
go on. Oh, my God.
Why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And Shane in North Carolina is on the line. Shane, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK. Yes, what's up?
I was just wanting to make just say something about the guy that called from California about that we're no better than the terrorists. I don't see where he's coming from. I mean, even Bill Clinton said that Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And after 9/11, we have to take the position in this country where we have to defend our borders and we have to defend ourselves from people like Hussein and other and bin Laden and people like that that would come over here and do us harm.
Well, Shane, I agree with you that Bill Clinton said that Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And according to his weapons inspectors, the guys who were working for him and for the United Nations, at the time Bill Clinton said it, Saddam did. And the United Nations spent 6 years over there systematically, one after another, going through and dismantling and destroying those weapons of mass destruction. And then the few factories that were apparently being hidden by Hussein, when word got back to Clinton about that, he bombed them. So, you know, to quote Bill Clinton back in 1998 as justification for 5 years later bombing Iraq doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand how you can say that.
Well, the thing is Hussein, our weapons inspectors went over there.
Said there are no weapons there. Hans Blix came back and he said, we've looked at, 680 sites. There's nothing here anymore.
Well, what about the scientist that had the nuclear device or a trigger mechanism hidden in his rose garden? Or
That scientist, interesting, we did a show about him last week. He had in his rose garden something that weighed about a pound and a half that would have been a part of about a 10,000-pound machine, and he was ordered to put it under, to hide it back in 92, and he was never told to bring it back out again. In fact, he was told it was never going to be brought back out again. And when news reporters interviewed him, and he said, oh, we never reconstituted the nuclear program. In fact, there was never any plan to. Suddenly, he vanished. Suddenly, he was no longer available to be interviewed. And that interview, of course, played on some of the media, but it didn't play on Faux News. I assume that you're probably watching Fox News.
Well, wouldn't you agree, though, it's better with Hussein not in power anymore? I mean,
I don't think that's any justification for killing several hundred Americans, thousands of people from another country, and wounding over 1,000 of our young men and women. I don't think that that's a good enough reason, frankly. There are many dictators in the world a hell of a lot worse than Saddam Hussein. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Shane, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. We'll be back after the news.
Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi,
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why don't
me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. 6 Iraqis are dead and 59 more wounded after a mortar attack on a U.S.-guarded prison on the outskirts of Baghdad Saturday night. About 500 Iraqi detainees, including common criminals as well as suspected anti-American guerrillas, are being held at the Abu Ghraib prison, which was one of Saddam Hussein's most notorious jails. Samir Samadai is a member of the Iraqi Interim Governing Council, and he called the attack cowardly.
I have been distressed to see the results of this cowardly attack on prisoners. Prisoners are, by definition, unarmed.
It's not clear so far who may have been behind that attack. Meanwhile, the U.S.-based Committee to Protect Journalists is calling for a full investigation into the shooting death of a Reuters cameraman in Iraq by American soldiers. 43-year-old Mazen Dana was shot to death by U.S. troops as he was filming outside the Abu Ghraib prison in western Baghdad. The U.S. military yesterday said soldiers thought Dana's camera was a rocket-propelled grenade launcher. The Palestinian cameraman was awarded the International Press Freedom Award by the Committee to Protect Journalists in 2001 for his work in Hebron, Israel. While there, he was wounded several times. It was an uneventful morning, finally, for those heading back to work in New York City for the first time since last week's blackout. More from correspondent Steve Sandberg.
The good news, mass transit running smoothly this morning. New Jersey Transit trains, buses, PATH, and ferries all on normal schedules. The bad news, while it might be easy getting back to work, staying there, a whole other story.
We have no air conditioning where I work, so I'm actually just going in to pick some stuff up and work from home.
Really? You're not bothered with the office, then?
Well, no, we've been told by our office, calls went out last night, that there's still no air conditioning in the building.
Mary Beth's Midtown office, like so many, heeding Mayor Bloomberg's advice as the region returns to normal after the blackout. Steve Sandberg in Hoboken.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Tensions between North and South Korea ratcheting up another notch now after South Korea's Navy fired warning shots when a North Korean ship briefly crossed over a disputed border in the Yellow Sea. No casualties were reported, but it is the second such incident in about a week. Law enforcement officials in West Virginia are investigating what could be a serial sniper case again. Three people have been shot dead in separate incidents over the past week. Officials in the area where these most recent murders have occurred say they're being offered many of the same resources that were used to investigate the sniper attacks in the D.C. area.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No,
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
The role of senior British government officials in naming advisor Dr. David Kelly as the source of a BBC report on an Iraqi weapons dossier is under the spotlight now. The inquiry into the weapons expert's apparent suicide is now hearing from leading Ministry of Defense and Downing Street officials. More from correspondent Suzanne Chislett.
Ministry of Defense Press Chief Pam Tier says her team was authorized to confirm David Kelly as the probable source of Andrew Gilligan's report if they were directly asked by journalists. She told Lord Hutton's inquiry discussions had taken place with Downing Street officials before the press statement was finalized, and although she admitted naming a civil servant was not normal practice in these cases, she said there was no precedent for action. Lord Hutton wants to know exactly who took the decision to release Dr. Kelly's name. The weapons expert was found dead less than 2 weeks after he was identified as the source of a report suggesting the government had exaggerated intelligence information in the September dossier on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. Suzanne Chislett, London.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. What you don't see can't hurt you, right? Neighborly ghosts and friendly spirits aside, think again. What you can't see can kill you. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it. Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas. Every summer, callers on the Car Clinic Network ask what's causing that odor when I turn on my air conditioner. And the answer? Bacterial growth in the AC system. The good news is there's an ingenious process from BG Products that cleans and disinfects your entire ventilation system without having to dismantle it. You'll breathe easier with a BG ventilation service, and your car will smell like new. To find a shop that performs this service, go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Conventional wisdom says ignorance is bliss. But colorless, odorless, and tasteless carbon gases, together with visible byproducts of pollution, harm health and environment. Enter Walbro Corporation's Smart Tank, the industry's first electronically managed fuel storage and delivery system. What this means to consumers and to citizens of planet Earth is harmful vapor collection and carbon vapor storage within the tank itself, while providing fuel pressure as demanded by your onboard computer, saving gas. That's one green machine, saving cash and the planet. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live on the IE America Radio Network, coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations. From the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite system and streaming live on the internet from radiopower.org, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com, and also available archives at whiterosesociety.org. If you want to drop into our chat room, go to tomhartmanshow.com and click on the chat room link, and it'll take you there. In this hour, we want to ask, what's up with the Democratic Leadership Council's third way? What is this thing? What does it mean to the Democratic Party? It's been a lot of infighting, a lot of debate going on, a lot of demonizing of the DLC. And on the other hand, the DLC has been demonizing the non-DLC candidates, particularly Howard Dean. It's funny, a couple of days ago on one of the websites out there, I saw... I think it was on one. It might have even been in one of the news magazines. Saw some article that said, you know, Howard Dean was the DLC candidate when he was governor of Vermont, and now he's become a liberal, or something to that effect. And of course, I'm broadcasting here live from the People's Republic of Vermont. And over the last 8 years or so, I'm not sure if I've lived here 7 or 8 years, but all the time that I've lived here up until this last election, Howard Dean has been our governor. And I've been able to rather closely observe him. And, you know, we have friends and acquaintances in common and whatnot. And I have a pretty good sense of the guy, I think. And I don't think he had anything to do with the DLC when he was running as when he was running this state as governor. So what is the third way that this whole Democratic Leadership Council is all about? And why is it that people are going nuts about it? Why are people so upset about it? What is the deal there? And by the way, if you have any thoughts on this or comments or would like to comment, and feel free to call any time during the show. 1-800-TALK-YES is the number, 1-800-825-5937. Anthony Giddens, who is a director of the London School of Economics and Political Science, wrote a book back in 1998 called The Third Way, The Renewal of Social Democracy. Now, this was after the fact. I mean, the DLC goes back to the early 90s. In fact, I think it goes quite a bit back before that. It was headed up by Bill Clinton way back, you know, I mean, who was president throughout the 90s. And this was the whole thing of the New Democrats. And in England, it's New Labour. And in Germany, you got Gerhard Schroeder. And he's got a word for it, too. It's Neue something or other. I forget the new what. And a couple of interesting little kind of factoids here. DLC stands for Democratic Leadership Council. And this is the group, Al Fromm and company, who have lately been attacking Howard Dean. And, of course, they have no use for Dennis Kucinich or many of the others because they say that they're too liberal. Hillary Clinton, by the way, once described the third way as, quote, a unified theory of life which will marry conservatism and liberalism, capitalism and statism, and tie together practically everything, the way we are, the way we were, the faults of man and the word of God, the end of communism and the beginning of the third millennium. So Hillary seems to think that this is sort of like, you know, the return of the Messiah or something. This is the thing that pulls it all together. And there are many... in the DLC, or, you know, one of the positions of the DLC has been that, you know, Bill Clinton was a successful politician because he followed the policies of the Democratic Leadership Council and the Third Way. And then there are others, and I'm among them, who are suggesting that Bill Clinton was an effective politician and a successful politician because he was Bill Clinton. Because he was a guy who had a lot of charisma. He was a very engaging guy. And until Monica came along, by and large, when he spoke, people believed him. They believed what he had to say, and they thought that he had, you know, integrity and honesty. He had leadership. He was a visionary. He was an activist. He was committed. He had a sense of fairness and family and hard work. He was able to mobilize people around various, you know, productive premises, and he was in favor of the flag and the environment and children and reform and all these kinds of things. And the reality is that when political candidates in the United States, candidates running for the Senate and the House of Representatives, tried to follow third way policies, they began to fail miserably. And in fact, I would suggest that the legacy of the third way is an eviscerated and divided Democratic Party. That the third way was an attempt to shift the Democratic Party into Republican light, turning it into something that it's not. It was formed back in 1985 by Al Fromm, according to one source, and this is I have every reason to believe that this is true, but it's just it may not be accurate. So I just want to put that caveat on it because I haven't been able to double source this. But this is, according to Al Fromm, in a presentation called Creating the Third Way, the Clinton New Democrat Path to Victory in 1992. Oh, no, that's not the source of this information. I have this information from our researcher, but I don't have a source for it. I'm sorry. But it says that the DLC was formed in 1985 by Al Fromm, aided with funds from Al Fulner, chief of the Heritage Foundation. And if that's true, that would make quite the conspiracy theory. But I'm sorry, I can't back that up on this. The Neue Mitte is the Gerhard Schroeder's version of it, the New Middle. And the whole notion of the Third Way boils down to a couple of specific points. And I just want to go through these, and because they're some of them are just absolutely internally contradictory, and some of them, many of them, are positions that are also carried by the Republican Party and by some folks. Now, again, within the conservative movement, you've got these huge splits. Some who call themselves conservatives. The question for the hour, what is the DLC's third way, and what does it mean to the Democratic Party? I want to share with you some pieces from a speech that was given, or an article that was written, or both, by Tony Blair and Gerhard Schroeder. It's called Europe, the Third Way, Die Neue Mitte. And in this, they say, number one, the essential function of markets must be complemented and improved by political action, not hampered by it. We support a market economy, not a market society. And I would suggest, first of all, there is no such thing as a market economy, that markets exist as a consequence of government creating them. The government creates the infrastructure for a market. A corporation is an entity that is created by the pleasure of a government or the authority of a government, let's say. The individuals create corporations, but they do them through the agency of a government. And so to think that there is this abstraction out there of an absolutely free market is a fantasy. But let's just go through some of their points. This is article by Tony Blair and Gerhard Schroeder. And I quote, the promotion of social justice was sometimes confused with the imposition of equality of outcome. And I would say, no, the idea was that social justice should have to do with equality of opportunity. And this is something that doesn't get talked about in this document anyway, and that certainly the cons don't like to talk about, the whole idea that even the founders held. That what this should be about is the equality of opportunity. Jefferson wrote about this at some length, that we realize that everybody isn't born equal, and we realize that everybody doesn't end up equal. But everybody should have an equal shot at the system, at what's going on. And so, no, there an equality of opportunity rather than an equality of outcome, number one. So I think one of their starting premises is flawed. Our number is 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937. And Stephanie, who is that on the line? Jeff in Dallas is on the line. Thank you, Steph. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
How are you doing, Tom?
I am alive and kicking, Jeff. How are you?
Well, we're actually doing pretty well. We actually got the Dallas Morning News to acknowledge that we exist.
We being Radio Left?
Yeah, they wrote an article.
Congratulations.
On the front page of the Metro section.
Oh, that's wonderful.
On
that
Sunday,
wonderful.
Even.
Well done.
It's a long, hard battle. But as far as the DLC is concerned, I have a mixed feeling about them, because the thing that I think we have to remember this. Most of the people in the country are, in fact, not as liberal as you or me or Dennis Kucinich. On the other hand, what the DLC seems to be forgetting is that the mission is to meet people where they are and then move them in a progressive direction instead of just pandering to them being in the middle.
Well, I think it even goes beyond that. The DLC has this whole third way thing is a philosophical construct, a worldview that, in my opinion, is absolutely at odds with the traditions of the Democratic Party and going all the way back to its creation by Thomas Jefferson. And that they're suggesting essentially that we turn the party or individual politicians over to control by or manipulation by or the influence of private corporations. And the corporatization of politics is, in my opinion, one of the things that has been very, very destructive in American politics. Jeff, congratulations on getting Radio Left on there, radioleft.com, right?
Right.
Yeah, radioleft.com is your website and a great programming thing. And thanks for the comment. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And down in Florida, we have Amanda on the line. Amanda, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, thank you. I listen to you all the time on the Internet, also Radio Left.
Cool.
Enjoy both of them very much. I was listening to this right, I guess he was a right-wing radio host last night, and you know what he says? He says the Democrats are stopping any good coming from Congress by making all these amendments to them. So it's like the Democrats' fault we're not doing anything. And, you know, when I'm thinking about all of the legislation that goes through, all I see is they've got to do something to pad the corporate interest by giving the populace something. The Democrats are outnumbered in Congress and Senate, so what are we going to do, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like these people are believing this stuff, and it's totally lies.
Yeah, well, this is what you know, there is a germ of truth to it, Amanda, and that is that the Democrats are trying to block a lot of Republican initiatives by putting poison pill amendments on them, and it's a good thing they are, because the Republicans are trying to hand the country over to very, very powerful and very toxic corporations. And the Republicans on the other side are blocking Democratic legislation, although they don't have to do it with riders and things. They can just kill it in committee because they're holding that power. Amanda, thanks for the call. I appreciate your comments. We're up to a break here now. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
The house needs painting, the kids need braces, and your car just died. Looks like you need a loan, but will you get it? It all depends on what lenders see in your credit report, which is why you should check out freecreditreport.com. Log on, and we'll show you how to find out online what's in your credit report and whether everything's accurate. Don't delay. See your credit report instantly. Make sure your credit's ready when you need it with freecreditreport.com.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Advertising has been likened to someone banging on a bucket with a pipe. And these days, the banging has grown cacophonous and constant. I'm certainly not against advertising and promotion. Indeed, it helps pay my bills. And it has its place in our world. But that place is not everywhere, which seems to be the new standard of this grasping industry. The latest example of the everywhere creed is the amazing flood of ads that lately has hit our movie theaters. This really rips my shorts. I mean, we pay money to go see a movie. Pay quite a bit, in fact, so Hollywood moguls can build another mansion and Schwarzenegger can buy another small country. Bad enough that paying for a movie ticket plus springing for popcorn and drinks requires you to take out a bank loan. But now, when the lights dim, instead of getting the previews and the movie you've paid to see, you're forced to sit there and absorb 15 minutes or so worth of stupid ads. We get nothing from this intrusion except anger. And who needs more of that? The big theater chains are using us as a captive audience for ads, stealing our time for their profit. Did I mention that we pay to get in? Who wants to pay to watch ads? The good news is you. the movie-going public. In theater after theater, the audience is yelling at the screen during these ads and raising hell with the managers. And a scrappy group in Chicago has even filed a class action suit for consumer fraud against Lowe's, one of the biggest chains and worst abusers of the movie ad scam. The suit demands that Lowe's either drop the ads or advertise the real starting time of the movie, so we consumers can decide if we want to endure their advertising abuse. Lowe's has called the suit ludicrous, and the industry says that we customers will learn to adjust to the forced viewing of ads. This is Jim Hightower saying, hell no, I won't adjust. To fight back, call Commercial Alert, 503-235-8012.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Looking in your eyes, I see a paradise. This world that I found is too good to be true. Standing here.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Laws and incentives, like affirmative action, were one of the major things that brought about social justice in the United States. Prior to that, here's the DLC again. The third way. This is from Tony Blair and Gerhard Schroeder. They say the means of achieving social justice became identified with ever higher levels of public spending, regardless of what they achieved or the impact of the taxes required to fund it on competitiveness, employment, and living standards. And at some level, you could say, yes, there has to be some appropriate way of evaluating whether government spending is getting the results that it's calling for, whether it's producing the outcome that you want. And part of that has to be is the electorate. But to simply say that spending produced social justice, no. I would say it had very little to do with spending, actually. It had to do with laws, where you pass laws and you say, you cannot discriminate against people. Sorry, we'll put you in jail. And that has nothing to do with spending. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Mike in Washington, D.C. is on the line. Mike, welcome to the program.
Tom, how are you doing? Hello?
Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you doing, Tom?
Good, how are you?
Here.
Okay, well.
At least I'm not in the dark.
All right, what's up?
Well, a couple of issues. To go back to last hour real quickly, if I could.
Mm-hmm.
The genius who called up and was screaming about a nuclear trigger buried in somebody's backyard or front yard.
Well, let's not criticize him. I mean, most people think that because most people watch the news, and this was smeared huge.
If anybody bothered to pay attention, it had nothing to do with a trigger. It was a piece of a centrifuge, which has nothing to do with a bomb. Sorry.
Right. It has to do with extracting plutonium from enriched uranium.
Exactly. But it has nothing to do with triggering the bomb or anything else. But people are so easily led and misled that this is the kind of garbage that they have coming out of their ears.
Well, and it's not just that. I mean, you've got an entire industry. You've got folks like Hannity out there just going on over and over and over, and it's the big lie technique. If you repeat something often enough, people will believe it. And this is what these cons have been doing, particularly with these issues around the Iraqi war, is repeating things even after they've been discredited. I mean, George Bush even tried trotting out the thing about, Saddam threw out the inspectors, and therefore we had to bomb him.
He wouldn't let them in.
Yeah. And it's like, how bizarre does it have to get before people go, wait a minute, somebody's lying here.
Exactly. Well, we've dumbed down the American public to such an extent that our leaders, quote unquote, can pull this garbage off.
Well, again, Mike, I think we need to cut people a little slack. I'm not sure that I would say that Shane has been dumbed down. I'd say that what's happened is that we've got a situation here now where people are working 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week just to make ends meet, and they're barely making ends meet because ever since the Reagan-Bush revolution, where they came up with this this philosophy, and this is a religion, the actual numbers do not back this up, that increasing wages made companies non-competitive, and therefore those companies would go offshore. The reality was they opened up the floodgates to, you know, we did away with our tariffs and allowed companies to go overseas. In fact, every time the minimum wage has gone up in the United States since the 1940s, it's been followed by 3 or 4 years of lower than normal inflation. Because the minimum wage goes up, people have more purchasing power, it actually increases the activity of local business.
Correct.
But pardon me, I went off on that. But my point is, I don't think that we should be, you know, just because people are believing these lies, that we should call them dumb.
Well, the thing is, we have dumbed them down because of the mainline media has all gone into corporate hands.
Yeah.
And been turned into profit-making centers.
I agree with you, Mike. It's all about making money. Mike, thanks for the call. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. I appreciate the call very much. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
A conservation group is trying to promote backyards that are butterfly-friendly. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. In the fall, millions of monarch butterflies will migrate thousands of miles across North America to spend the winter along the California coast and in the mountains of central Mexico. Some of the butterflies will fly as far as 3,000 miles on this trip. The butterflies rely exclusively on the milkweed plant for food. But urban sprawl and herbicides have severely cut into the abundance of milkweed plants on the migration routes. Christopher Singer says people can help the monarchs by planting a few milkweed seeds in their backyards. Singer is the founder of the Live Monarch Foundation, a nonprofit group that's dedicated to monarch butterfly conservation. The group is active in distributing milkweed seeds, and Singer would like to see a lot more milkweed planted.
Monarch eats a lot of food. One caterpillar eats over 20 leaves. That's the normal mid-sized plant. So if you have 280 million monarchs on the migration route from central Mexico to central Canada, they need a lot of milkweed along the way. So it's very important that monarchs are able to find milkweed throughout that entire 3,000-mile migration route.
Singer says milkweed abundance right now is at an all-time low. He says monarchs can use several different milkweed species, but tropical milkweed is heavily favored by egg-laying females. He says it's also one of the easiest varieties to grow, and the plant grows quickly. For more information on monarch butterflies and milkweed, check the website of the Live Monarch Foundation at www.livemonarch.org. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
We'll be right back.
the best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. Speaking to you live here on the IE America Radio Network. It's 34 minutes after the hour. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. Our website is the TomHartmanShow.com or LiberalTalkRadio.com. We'll get you there. And if you want to drop into the chat room, just follow the lines. Our question for the hour, what is the DLC's third way, and what does it mean to the Democratic Party? And 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Tim in Hartford, Connecticut, is on the line. Tim, welcome to the program.
Well, Tom, you could probably guess what I'm going to say about the DLC. And that
I think
that the fact that, you know, they are doing such a good job of blurring the lines between the Republican and Democratic Party in particular, and really almost turning off a lot of people to politics.
And
I think because of the fact that they don't see any clear differences.
And this is the thing, and I think that a lot of Democrats have bought this hook, line, and sinker. I mean, Democrats in politics, they really thought that Bill Clinton was successful because he was following third way policies, and so he goes ahead and he signs NAFTA and GATT, and he does all these things that he was a good guy on the environment in some ways, and
I'm biting my tongue. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean,
go ahead, Tim.
That's just it. People really have no idea the magnetism and charisma that Clinton and put forth that crossed a lot of lines. And with all due respect to all of these nine people who are running a candidacy, I don't see anybody, you know, even with Dean getting that excited that they're just like, oh, this is the person that crosses the lines that, you know, really excites a lot of people. Now, you know, exciting a liberal base doesn't mean that you're going to, you know, win the general election in the long term. But at the same time, boy, and even after the, you know, I have to say, after last week with the pie incident in California, where Ralph Nader was creamed with pie, and all the things that are going on the internet, you know, there was this talk of trying to bring the Greens back into the Democratic fold, and do you think for one moment that the DLC really wants that?
No, they don't, and that's one of the reasons that I'm doing this program. I think that it's very important that people understand who the DLC is, what they're all about, and what the third way is, and so that they, you know, they can make up their mind. Is this the way that at least the Democrats can make up their mind? Is this the way that they want their party to go or not? I personally think it's suicide.
Well, if you've got a situation, you mentioned Schroeder in Germany, if you've got a situation where you can form a coalition government like they have, where, you know, their group and the Greens have formed a coalition to maintain that kind of tricky thing, that may be one thing. But with this winner-take-all kind of system that, you know, shuts out or divides people, I think I see political suicide amongst the Democratic Party. I'm looking at a McGovern or Mondale scenario in the long term, because I don't think that the activist base is really going to be there and push across the Democratic Party like that it needs to. It gets people as excited as Clinton was to go out and work in the ranks to, you know, do the kind of grassroots stuff that really gets people elected.
Unless there's a candidate who genuinely is progressive on the issues, who will excite the progressive base, and who has some level of charisma. I frankly think that Howard Dean may be that person, and Dennis Kucinich may be that. I don't think that personally that Kucinich has the I don't know what it is.
I mean,
he's a brilliant speaker, and he's a great guy.
But quite frankly, I like him on a lot of positions. I don't think he has the charisma that comes across to a lot of people. And if Howard Dean keeps this mended when it comes along, you know, this kind of, it's a two-faced thing to me to say that you're, you know, once you get into office, you're going to amend NAFTA and GATT, or once you get in office, you're going to take this position and that position. If Kyoto, I'm going to fix it stuff later on. It's not exactly very exciting to a lot of activists out there.
Yeah.
unfortunately. Yeah. Well, good point. Have a good day, Tom.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. I appreciate your calling. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, 22 minutes before the hour, and we have Rama in Vermont. Is this Rama who fills in for me when I'm not here?
Yeah, Tom. I just had to call in.
Hey, Rama.
That last caller there, and I think what a lot of people miss when they start talking about can somebody like Dean excite the Democratic or the Democrat masses, I am a traditional non-Democrat voter. I find the Republicans abhorrent in my own personal view as they exist today, but I don't vote Democrat very often. And somebody like Howard Dean has really perked up my attention, and he's like the first Democrat that I've actually ever sent – well, no, he's the second that I've ever sent money to help in a campaign.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I'll vote for him, but I do know I'll keep sending him money because as he talks, he says a lot of things that to me make sense. Look, he's not perfect. Nobody's going to be. But Dean is a lot better than a lot of other things I see running around out there.
Yeah. Now, Dean is a non-DLC Democrat, first of all, so which brings us back to the topic of this hour. But also, Rama, you were a talk show host here in Vermont during the 8 years that Howard Dean was governor of the state, or many of those 8 years.
Yep.
What did you think of him as a governor?
I think I might have voted for him the first time. I don't think I voted for him any of the other. Actually, I think we were talking about 10 years there, Tom. But,
10 years, yeah.
I always had this feeling about him. I never voted for him, but I always thought he did a good job. And if it weren't for the fact that literally he reminded me so much of one of my older brothers, he probably would have gotten my vote. It was that emotional of a decision on my part.
Okay. Rama, thanks a lot.
Yep.
I appreciate the call and the comment and good on you. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. The number is 1-800-TALK-YES. The question, what is the DLC's third way and what does it mean to the Democratic Party? Let's get back to some of these points of the third way and what this is all about. In this speech by Blair and Gerhard Schroeder, they say, values that are important to citizens, such as personal achievement and success, entrepreneurial spirit, individual responsibility, and community spirit, were too often subordinated to universal social safeguards. And this is one of the mantras of the conservative movement, is that that you can't have both. If you're going to have some sort of a social safety net, if you're going to have Social Security, if you're going to have any sort of a welfare program, if you're going to provide for people when they get sick, if you're going to have any kind of a system at all that catches people when they fall, then you are not going to be promoting personal achievement, success, entrepreneurial spirit, individual responsibility, and community spirit. And I would say, in a world where those social safety nets have run amok to the point where they have become constraints rather than safety nets, that may be true, as was the case in the Soviet Union. But it is certainly not true in Norway. It is certainly not true in Sweden. It's certainly not true in Finland or Denmark, some of the most progressive countries in the world, in Holland, in England, in France. This is not the case, and it's not the case here in the United States. I don't think we've ever come close to it, frankly. What has subordinated personal achievement and success, entrepreneurial spirit, individual responsibility, and community spirit have been corporate aristocracies, where people have just reached the point where they are terrified of losing their job, where they're willing to work for less and less money and willing to work harder and harder. And as a consequence of this, we're seeing a breakdown in our social systems. We're seeing childhood suicides tripling in the last 20 years. We're seeing children under the age of 10 committing suicide now, which was absolutely – there are no statistics for that prior to 1960. We're seeing divorce rates going through the roof. We're seeing all this evidence of social disintegration. And at the same time, we're seeing people making less and less money and corporations making more and more. There was a statistic that came out just last week that there was a slight increase in average wages. I think it was a 3% for the year in average. But when you break it into quintiles, into fifths, what you discover is that the top fifth and the second to the top fifth had such incredibly dramatic increases in their incomes that even though the two bottom fifths actually had decreases in their income and the middle fifth was about the same, that the top fifths were so high that it kind of flipped it all. They flipped the whole statistic forward a little bit. And this is being promoted by the administration as, oh, look it, people are making more money. Well, actually, no. The rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. Literally. Literally right now in America. And so, when the folks promoting the third way say values that are important to citizens, such as personal achievement and success, entrepreneurial spirit, individual responsibility, and community spirit, were too often subordinated to universal social safeguards, I'd say nonsense. That it was universal social safeguards from the 1930s to the 1970s, during the time when we had the greatest number of workers in this nation who were unionized, the greatest number of people who with one single worker in a family working a 40-hour week could actually put their kids all the way through school, even put their kids through college. Many of I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, in a working class neighborhood, and many of my close friends, their parents worked at Oldsmobile, and though with a union job, there a single parent was actually able to put some of those kids through college. And that was a time of great productivity in the United States. It was a time of great social stability. It was the golden era of the last 200 years of the United States. And now we're sliding back into that robber baron era where we're saying social safety nets are not good things. Social safety nets are, the cons are coming forward and saying, to have a social safety net is to discourage people from working hard. And I would say that, there are two ways to motivate people. This is, psychology 101. This is so basic and yet it is so easily missed. There are two ways to motivate people. People are always doing one of two things. They are either moving toward pleasure or moving away from pain. And moving away from pain is an immediate strategy. It gets an immediate response. You put your hand on a fire, you pull it back, it's hot. But moving away from pain as a way of motivating people over the long term is ultimately destructive. It wears them down. And so people who work because they feel a threat ultimately are the ones that go postal. They're the ones who are burned out. They're the ones who are exhausted. They're the ones who hate their jobs. They're the ones who have miserable lives and whose children are unhappy and who and on the other hand, moving toward pleasure, although it's not as powerful an immediate force, it has the ability to sustain over the long term. And people who use motivation strategies grounded in moving toward pleasure over the long term become more and more and more, increasingly more and more productive, more and more happy, more and more competent. They're the way, when you talk to people about how they just wake up in the morning, you discover that some people, they may have to have, three or four alarms to wake them up in the morning. They wake up and they start thinking about the terrible things that will happen if they don't get to work on time. It's a moving away from pain strategy. They hate their work, but they're afraid of what will happen if they don't go. People, on the other hand, who wake up easily and effortlessly in the morning, almost always you ask them, what do you think of the first thing when you wake up? And they'll tell you about moving toward pleasure strategies. They'll say, I look forward. Even if they don't have a job, you could have two people who have the exact same job. And one has this moving toward pleasure strategy, the other moving away from pain. The moving away from pain person can't get up in the morning. The moving toward pleasure person wakes up 5 minutes before the alarm goes off. And they're thinking about, the people they're going to meet, the people they're going to talk to, the things that they're going to do, the fun they're going to have. And increasingly, the philosophy of the workplace, and really this is one of the groundings, the philosophical groundings of the whole conservative movement, is that you must motivate people by fear. It's the, punish kids and they'll respond. It's the fear and punishment. It's one of the reasons why we have more people in prison in the United States, both on an absolute numbers basis and a per capita basis right now, than any nation on earth. Because the moving away from pain folks have been in charge for so long now, largely ever since Reagan, and it's devastating the United States. And it's devastating our social fabric, and it's devastating our workplaces. And so, to bring this back around, when Tony Blair and Gerhard Schroeder say, and I quote, values that are important to citizens such as personal achievement, success, entrepreneurial spirit, individual responsibility, and community spirit were too often subordinated to universal social safeguards, I'd say nonsense. They were subordinated to corporate aristocracies. They were subordinated to fear. And that has been what has stopped these things, because what we saw was that when we had people who had good wages and social security and social safety, a sense of social safety, back in the 50s and 60s and early 70s, when insurance companies like Blue Cross Blue Shield had to be nonprofit, and so their primary agenda was delivering services rather than generating profit, when hospitals were nonprofit, before Bill Frist got into the act and made millions, you know, just sucking the cream out of hospitalization, before all that happened, we had people building businesses like crazy. I mean, it was just a boom time in the United States. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Jeff in Denver's on the line. Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, you just mentioned prisons again, the prison population like we spoke of last week.
Hey, Jeff, talk again. Start over again there. We just got your volume up loud.
Okay.
Enough.
Yes, you spoke of the prison population again and this fear thing. And we spoke of prisons last week, and I called and mentioned that actually the population over time is actually greater. And there's just news out today on CNN that one in every 37 U.S. adults was either imprisoned at the end of 2001 or had been incarcerated, which comes out to 2.7% of the adult population. Which, when you're talking about disenfranchised voters, if most of those cannot vote because of felonies, that's a pretty significant percentage of the potential voting population, of course, who is potentially Democrat.
Yeah, although, you know, if the Republicans would bring up the argument, do you really want a felon voting?
Oh, yeah, of course they would, but then again, that's the fear thing.
Yeah, well, and I would say, in my mind, there are a lot of those people who are in prison inappropriately. I think that, you know, this whole dealing with drugs, which is a medical problem as a criminal problem, has just really, really harmed this nation.
Well, look how just the cost of each person in prison would have cost the rest of the populace.
It's a very profitable industry. The private prison industry is hugely profitable. They spend millions of dollars lobbying representatives. The drug testing industry is hugely profitable. You sell a test that costs about 5 cents to make for 20, 30 bucks, and in many cases, corporations are required by law to buy these tests now, the airlines and whatnot. Good point. Thank you very much for the call, Jeff. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. We'll be right back after this break. Stay tuned.
A real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole?
Uh-huh.
Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get Maximum Strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol?
Yes, Ms. Cole. Maximum Strength Ambisol. Dentist strong, so the pain is gone.
When I wear black, even a little dandruff shows. And my old dandruff shampoo just wasn't cutting it. I still had flakes and dry scalp. So I switched to Celsin Blue Moisturizing Shampoo with aloe and moisturizers. Doctor recommended Celsin Blue has a proven ingredient to relieve dandruff. Plus, it keeps my hair and scalp healthy and flake-free.
If you see flakes, try Celsin Blue. Celsin Blue Moisturizing Dandruff Shampoo.
I'm telling you, it really works.
Never wear black without the blue. Celsin Blue. Use as directed.
thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
yeah.
Stop.
A few more years.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troop lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they had stated in a policy and in a
This
in
is
a
what they
contract?
Said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And the beat goes on. The beat goes on. Drums keep pounding a rhythm to the brain.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. When public within the public sector, bureaucracy at all levels must be reduced, say the third wave folks. And I would say that is absolutely arbitrary and futile. The core concept of feudalism is that the rise of local wealth power will only exist as government power that might balance it diminishes. This is feudalism in disguise, the third way. If you'd like to be on our program today, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And Phil in Florida is on the line. Phil, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, hi, Tom. You know, I've called in before, and I'm very much of a progressive person. But I got a perspective as a employee of in the state of California about a year and a half ago, as an employee of Salinas Valley State Penitentiary, or prison.
Right.
It's a level 4, which is high security, 4,400 men. Though I was hired as a teacher, I was assigned to the law library. There's 5 law libraries in the prison, one for each pod, including administrative segregation, better known as the hole. In any event,
so
I got
about
to
a
know
minute
these.
And a half, so.
It, pardon me?
We have about a minute and a half.
Okay.
Just to,
I got to know these prisoners very well because I used to come in every day. And one of the things is that, and know the prison. And maybe this is unique to California, but a very high, probably 75% of the people who are in there were in there as a function of gang-related activity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that was one thing.
Which is entrepreneurialism and community building, right? In the lack of social structure where people can actually get a job, gangs provide them with a job, and in the lack of a society that provides structure, gangs provide them with structures. And, of course, drugs is the primary entrepreneurial activity of
most
gangs.
And carjacking and other kinds of things. Yep. But one of the things that I learned that I never realized until I got to know these guys is though they might be in there for carjacking or for one murder or whatever, when I got to know them, they admitted to me that they were in there for one crime, but they had committed many that they never got caught for.
Right.
So they need to be there.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with that. I would never suggest that we start kicking open the doors on a high-security prison, Phil. I agree with you. Here with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. The U.S. military has admitted killing a television journalist in Iraq over the weekend. American soldiers shot Mazen Dana after mistaking his camera for a rocket-propelled grenade launcher. Meanwhile, U.S. efforts to rebuild Iraq have suffered setbacks over the weekend with explosions along the country's oil pipeline as well as on Baghdad's water supply. More from correspondent Nina Maria Potts.
While fires raged out of control along Iraq's oil pipeline to Turkey, the main water pipe in Baghdad was bombed over the weekend. The pipeline fires brought exports to a standstill. In renewed violence, a mortar attack on a Baghdad prison being used by the U.S. killed 6 Iraqis and injured about 60. Meanwhile, 41-year-old Reuters cameraman Mazen Dana of the West Bank town of Hebron was videotaping outside the prison hours after the attack when U.S. soldiers shot him. Nina Maria Potts reporting.
A one-time Chicago-area Islamic charity leader has been sentenced to 11 years and 4 months in prison for transferring charity donations to terrorist groups. Enam Arno pleaded guilty earlier this year to diverting more than $300,000 in funds to Chechen rebels and Muslim forces in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Arno once headed the now-shuttered Benevolence International Foundation in Palos Hills, Illinois. State law enforcement officials in West Virginia are worried there may be a copycat sniper on the loose. Last fall, of course, 13 people were killed in shootings near Washington, D.C., and now 3 people are dead after more random shootings in West Virginia. The latest from correspondent Priscilla Huff.
Police in West Virginia have stepped up their patrols after 3 citizens were shot at gas stations. Authorities are asking anyone who might have any information to come forward because they've got little to go on. One report says a large black pickup truck with gold stripes was seen near the scene of one shooting. Another says a large white man was spotted. Law enforcement suspects the same person is involved because the bullets from the 3 murders are similar. The 2 men from the original sniper case, John Boyd Malvo and John Allen Mohammed, are in prison awaiting their first trials in Virginia. Priscilla Huff reporting.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all...
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Just because I look like doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
The gubernatorial recall vote in California might be delayed now. A judge will rule August 29th on putting it off until March. The decision stems from a suit filed by activists claiming the hastily organized election may bypass federal monitoring of the voting process. The death toll in one of Europe's worst ever heat waves might reach 5,000. That at least the word from France's health minister, who just yesterday said the death toll wouldn't be more than 3,000. The French government last week recalled vacationing medical workers under an emergency plan designed to deal with terrorist attacks as well as natural disasters like this.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
An Iranian official says his country has foiled several al-Qaeda terrorist attacks planned within that nation. Still, Iran is being forced to fend off U.S. allegations it's harboring terrorists. More from Middle East correspondent Roxana Saberi in Tehran.
The newspaper Iran is reporting that Hassan Rouhani says a number of al-Qaeda suspects had organized extensive terrorist plots on Iranian territory. The secretary of Iran's highest decision-making body for foreign affairs said Iran's security forces thwarted the attacks, but he did not specify the targets or when the planned attacks were foiled. He also did not say if any arrests in relation to the alleged plans had been made. Tehran had said earlier it had arrested and deported hundreds of suspected members of al-Qaeda. Washington has said it wants to question those still in Tehran's custody. But Iran has said it won't hand over senior members to the U.S. because Iran has no extradition treaty with Washington. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Ah, the family photo album. Always keep a camera handy to capture those special Kodak moments. Like senior proms, graduations, weddings, traffic accidents. Why? When I come back, I'll give you a snapshot. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Now, don't get bent out of shape when I advise taking pictures of your car that's bent out of shape in an accident. When accidents occur, emotions run high and details are overlooked, like traffic and road conditions. And those involved don't always see or remember the same thing. What's at stake? Who pays, of course? Keeping an inexpensive disposable camera in your car ready to capture the moment is no accident. One of these pictures could be worth a thousand words and a lot of dollars, too. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. What's the real cause of the Northeast blackout? It's interesting. Over the weekend, I was
I was watching, I forget which news show it was, but there was this interview show, I think it was CNN, and they had a guy on from Wired magazine. Wired is, of course, a computer magazine, and they had this guy on, and he was talking about just how we're going to have these power networks all over the world, and we'll be able to generate power in South America and transmit it to North America and all the way from South Africa up to Europe and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, whoa, where did they get this guy? He was using the metaphor of the Internet. Yes, we can instantaneously transmit information from South America to Europe, or South Africa to Europe, or South America to North America. Yeah, no problem. I can take a bit of information and convey it, you know, across the world, instantaneously, virtually. I mean, almost at the speed of light, with very little effort. But that, because that's consuming very, very little electricity. And in some cases, virtually none. I mean, when it goes over a fiber optic cable, it's being transmitted as light. But high tension lines, power lines, generate huge losses. There are two kinds of losses that happen with power lines, with long-term power lines. One are what are called resistance losses. That is, you know, copper is not a superconductor. It has some resistance to electricity. So the more copper you push that electricity through, over time, the more of that electricity gets converted into heat because of the resistance of the copper and dissipated into the atmosphere. And then the other type of loss that you get from long lines is what's called an inductive loss, which is that the lines are producing actual waves. You know, the same way that a radio station transmits a signal from an antenna, a power line transmits a signal, which is the frequency of that power. So you've got these 60-cycle waves, these 60-hertz waves of energy flowing out from these power lines, particularly when the power lines are long enough to be a wavelength at 60 hertz, which is several miles of length. I forget the exact length. It's been 30 years since I studied electrical engineering, it's been longer than that. But in any case, you have these two types of losses, and as a result of this, if you try and push electricity more than a few hundred miles through copper, you start losing 15-20% of your power. And so, yes, it is possible to transmit power over relatively long distances, 200 miles, 300 miles, 500 miles, but it starts getting very expensive and very wasteful. And so one of the suggestions that has been put forward to solve this problem, interestingly, in the front page of the second section of today's Wall Street Journal, was what's called distributed networks, that is, generating electricity locally. And we're going to get into that in just a minute. First, I just wanted to share with you some of the things from the news. You know, of course, it was interesting on some of the right-wing news sites. They were, as soon as the blackout happened, one of them had this thing, how long will it be before they blame Bush? And I think that the reason why the right knew that the left was going to blame Bush, let's say in the most simplistic terms, for this power failure, is because it was an absolutely predictable consequence of his policies. It was absolutely predictable. In fact, there were warnings about it. And it goes back to this kind of crony capitalism. I mean, ABC News. The Ohio Power Company failed to separate from the national electric grid. Well, who's the Ohio Power Company? Turns out it's a company called First Energy. First Energy has an interesting past. Let me just share with you an email that I got from M. Lady Sally. I forget what state Sally's in. She's talking about First Energy in Akron, Ohio. She says the president of First Energy is Tony Alexander, who served on the Bush Energy Transfer Team with Cheney and who is a Bush pioneer. One of those people who raised over $100,000 in individual donations to the 2000 campaign. The fact that First Energy system was not working properly may stem from the Republican House action at Bush's instigation, Sally says, in voting down the FAR amendment calling for $350 million in electric power grid improvement loans three times. And then, of course, on 8/14, Bush says, we'll have to look at it and determine whether or not our grid needs to be modernized. I happen to think it does, and I've said so all along. Sally says, hogwash! Bush blocked the bill in 2001 three times,
and continues to do so. So ABC News, now FirstEnergy is the nation's 10th largest investor-owned electric utility. It owns fossil plants, nuclear power plants, sells oil, sells gas. This is privatization. What is the real cause of the Northeast blackout? It's the religion of corporatization. This economic religion that a corporation can always do things better than any other form of organization. That if you organize things in a way that a small number of people can make a large amount of money if it works right, that's better than organizing things in such a way that everybody works toward a particular mission. For example, if you had an electric utility where the first mission of the electric utility was to provide electricity to people, and its second mission was to make a profit doing that, which is a regulated utility, as we had in the United States from 1934 when Roosevelt first made it a crime for utilities to give money to politicians to make sure that they stayed out of politics and they stayed to the business of making electricity right up until the Bush-Reagan so-called revolution when this was undone. And which led us right to Enron, which led right to the California energy crisis, and this whole Bush thing. Tony Alexander raised more than $100,000 for the 2000 Bush. Alexander was also a major player in the Bush energy transition team. The two-day energy conference at First Energy Corporation. They had a fundraiser for George Bush. And in the following days, they raised 7% of all the contributions made by Ohio residents to Bush in the critical first six months of his campaign for President of the United States. This is from the Akron Beacon Journal in October of 1999. First Energy in the 2000 election cycle contributed a total of $852,915, and 72% of that went to Republican candidates. The company gave over $1 million in the 2002 election cycle, again 70% of that going to Republicans. And just a week before the blackout, they had been convicted of a crime under the Clean Air Act. A U.S. judge, Edmund Sargas in Columbus, Ohio, ruled in favor of a lawsuit filed by the Clinton administration that accused First Energy's Ohio Edison Company of violating the Clean Air Act by classifying projects as maintenance instead of new construction. So here you have this company facing a lawsuit and big bucks as a result of Clinton administration legislation and prosecutions that were initiated. And then into that steps this is just amazing. Federal standards for utilities face partisan hurdles. This is from today's New York Times. The Bush administration called on Congress today to impose immediate standards for electricity reliability on utilities to prevent further blackouts. Now, let me get this straight. The Bush administration just called for regulation of the utility industry, and yet at the same time, they're talking about deregulation. Spencer Abraham, the Secretary of Energy, said the nation needed to move quickly away from a system where utilities decided how to respond to power failures to one of federal standards. This is an article by David Firestone. In today's New York Times, federal standards for utilities face partisan hurdles. Abraham says we need to pass an energy... Now, here's where it cuts to the chase. This is the old talk a good line, but then don't do it. We need to pass an energy bill that gives the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission the authority to impose mandatory reliability standards. See, now, on the one hand, you see all these conservative pundits on TV and on the radio saying, the problem is that the electricity industry is too regulated. But the reality is that they were deregulated. Even transmission was largely deregulated, and the standards that exist right now are guidelines. And so Abraham says we need to pass an energy bill that gives the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission the authority to impose mandatory reliability standards. He goes on to say, this is on CNN's late edition, the people who use the system have to adhere to high standards of conduct or be punished if they fail to do so. See, the religion of the As conceptualguerrilla.com points out, the cheap labor conservatives, the religion of the conservatives, of the cons, is that you have to provide incentives. And when they use, the corrupt worldview, this destructive and disgraceful worldview that essentially is abusing the system, they're suggesting that an incentive means you offer people the opportunity to make money. But there's also the incentive for those, as we were talking about in the last hour, for those folks who absolutely you cannot rely on them to behave appropriately. I mean, this is the way that the business world looks at many employees, unfortunately. And it's unfortunate that we have to look at people in business this way. But history shows, hey, that they will rely, that the other kind of incentive you offer is a regulation saying, this is what you got to do. I'm sorry. This is it. If you don't do this, you can lose your business. Because the bottom line is that if these companies continue to operate in a deregulated environment, we're going to continue to have these kind of disasters. The issue, and here's where we get to it. So you got Spencer Abraham saying we need to have regulation. And this, of course, is not being widely reported by the conservative pundits. And then you've got, here's Representative Edward J. Markey, Massachusetts Democrat. He says, this issue has been held hostage by the Republican agenda of trying to drill in the most pristine wilderness, environmentally sensitive areas of the country. The Republicans don't want to separate this out. They don't want to have a power bill that demands that the electric utilities actually provide electricity without, which they know that the Democrats are in favor of, and everybody else is in favor, without at the same time on that same bill saying, and we're going to drill for oil up in Alaska. Because they know if they separate them, the oil drilling in Alaska is not going to happen. In fact, Tom DeLay, a former exterminator and now House Republican leader, blamed Democrats for blocking the energy bill. This intolerant guy, he suggests, this is pathetic. He says the blackout was caused because the energy bill had been blocked by, quote, environmental extremists. And this is just over the top. This is Tom Hartman on the iAmerica Radio Network. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. We still honor we the people instead of they the transnational corporation. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Shake it up. Shake it up. Shake it up. Dance all night. Get real loose.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, The North American Electric Reliability Council is the group that was set up back some years ago after a major blackout. I don't recall if it was 65 or 77. It was one of those two to oversee the reliability of our power grid system. And its director, Michael R. Gent, says, according to the New York Times, he needs federal authority to make those standards mandatory because it is a voluntary industry group right now. And Governor Bill Richardson of New Mexico, who was energy secretary during the Clinton administration, said, and I'm quoting from the New York Times here, said Congress had been swayed by the lobbying of electric utilities that prefer state rather than federal regulations of rates and profits. There are a lot of lobbies in the utility industry that like to keep the status quo so they can keep making profits, Mr. Richardson said on CNN. And as a result, our systems, our electricity grid is overloaded with power. I'd say it goes beyond just making profits. It goes to making wild profits. Utilities were making profits all along when they were regulated. They were just modest profits. I mean, they paid dividends, and you can invest in, you know, it's like playing Monopoly. You invest in a utility, and you know that every year, you know, it's a 5-6% return on your investment, and it's just stable. It's stable and healthy, and there you go. And then along came Ken Lay and George W. Bush and said, hey, no, let's turn it into a betting parlor. And off, you know, off and running. Common Cause has a news release out on their website here today. Closed door activities of the National Energy Policy Development Group, headed by Vice President Dick Cheney. Not even Congress has a full knowledge of who was on his task force. And how is Energy Secretary Spencer Abraham will be holding a private closed-door briefing on energy Thursday. Now, this was back in May of 2001 This is back before 9/11, but this is the example of how this all worked. Energy Secretary Spencer Abraham will be holding a private closed-door briefing on Energy Thursday. This being Washington, all you need is a big check made out to the Republican National Senatorial Committee to attend. So, I mean, this is not anything new with this administration. It's been basically how they've been doing business right from the very beginning. And no doubt is still going on. We find out that the head of the energy company that browned out the Northeast is one of Bush's pioneers. Are you going to see that in the front pages of the newspaper? Somehow I doubt it. Our question for the hour, what's the real cause of the Northeast blackout? Yes, I would say it is the religion of corporatization, this greed-based, hypocritical ideology of corporatization. Instead of using the far more humane, intelligent, freedom-based movement toward that was started by Jefferson and Madison and Adams and Washington of making sure that the commons of the United States, preserving the commons in a principled fashion, caring for the commons of the United States, that is one of the purposes of the United States and of the United States government and of our corporate citizens, as it were, that organizations, institutions in the United States are allowed to be brought into creation because they are going to in some way help make this country better, help provide for the common welfare, provide for the blessings of liberty to ourselves and future generations. So, anyhow, what do we do about it? Well, it turns out, this is interesting, the country is kidding itself, says the Wall Street Journal today, this article by Jeffrey Ball, Energizing Off-Grid Power. Speaking of peddling everything from natural, the country is kidding itself if it thinks it can rely exclusively on a decades-old modern model of electricity production. Changes are coming. Changes are happening. And they're happening fast. Let me fill you in when we come right back from this break. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Employees of the Canadian federal government were angry when lawmakers earlier this year voted to spend $14 billion of their surplus pension fund money to reduce the federal deficit. Lawsuits were filed to challenge the move, and the case is currently in the discovery process. The Public Service Alliance of Canada says the records show the government's been using tricks of accounting to have pension money cover each part of the federal deficit since 1995. This means the government's been chronically underpaying into the fund of its workers for at least 8 years. This appears to be just the tip of the iceberg, too, as the case isn't scheduled for trial until late next year at the earliest.
At the Kia Motors plant outside of Seoul, Korea these days, you're more likely to find a friendly game of soccer than an assembly line in full swing. 25,000 Kia workers are on strike, demanding a 5-day work week, profit sharing and year-end bonuses, and an 11% wage increase. Assembly line worker Pei Kun Kyu says he'd welcome a boost in pay, but is more concerned with winning a greater say in car development, something he sees as key to job security.
In the car cycle, if the company can't sell cars, few people can buy the cars. The management can easily fire workers. This is what I'm concerned about. So even though I may get more money, what's most important for me is the employee stabilization.
Kia workers are eyeing the recent successful strike of their counterparts at Hyundai Motors, who won big wage increases, a five-day work week, and a say in the management of their company. Kia reported record sales in July, but the strike has disrupted the production of some 23,000 cars.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, I'm Stephen Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Stephen at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Throughout his presidency, the Wall Street Journal says, Mr. Bush has skillfully used crises to promote his broader long-term agenda. In the name of fighting recession, he won massive tax cuts to overhaul the tax code. In the same way, the president may channel the vivid images of families sweltering in the August heat to finally get his complex, controversial energy package enacted. This being $16 or $18 billion in subsidies to the energy business. And in fact, as the Wall Street Journal points out, they also fear incentivize is a euphemism for consumer rate increases. And of course it is. We don't want to harm the profits of the electric power industry. Giving enforcement muscle to the now voluntary organization that oversees the grid, the North American Electric Reliability Council, might be a good idea. And here's this one point that the journal made. NERC officials have been warning Congress for 4 years that deregulation has made it harder for the organization to monitor and enforce rules. But there are solutions, and the solution is rapidly moving to a decentralized system, rapidly moving to it. And I'm going to get into that in some more detail here in just a moment. If you'd like to be on the program today, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Gary in St. Joseph, Missouri has called. Gary, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, good afternoon, Tom. Been listening here all afternoon while working on the computer. I don't have a radio station in the area, so I'm stuck with the Internet. We've got a similar situation here. We had a local power company bought out and then bought out again by a large conglomerate. Mm-hmm. And the first thing they did is they got rid of quite a bit of their seasoned help. And since then, I've grown accustomed to having random power failures at my home.
Yeah.
And I think basically it's just about the same all over. Big companies come in, they're going to buy up these utilities because they know they have a given rate of return, cut out all the deadwood, and fatten up the profits for their own reasons, and the heck with the customers. So when a disaster like the power failure in the Northeast happens, there's a bunch of people standing around going, I don't know. I'm pointing fingers at you. Maybe you know what's going on. And it's kind of a passing of the buck.
Yeah, and Gary, when we say the Northeast, we have to exempt Vermont from that. Our power never went down here in Vermont, even though we are surrounded by states that did, because Vermont is one of the only states in the Northeast that has not deregulated its power systems.
we still, you know, government still holds the power companies here accountable. And I think that's in part because our state legislators, I had dinner with one last Friday night, they make like, I don't know, $15,000 a year or something. I mean, this is basically, these are citizen servants, public servants, people who are involved as a part-time job in the legislature because they care about the state. And so you don't have this issue of corporations coming in handing huge wads of campaign cash to legislators, and then the legislators saying, okay, yes, we'll deregulate you, we'll corporatize this whole thing, we'll hand the commons over to you, and you can do whatever you want, suck it dry, let it fall apart. Pardon my rant, Gary. Anyway, the point
that's okay. Yeah, you know, it just seems like that's the bottom line to everything is, you know, everybody's looking for maximum profits and let the pieces fall where they may. I've got a friend of mine who works for the major power company back in Montana where I grew up, and they recently turned over a new leaf, and the money turned that ran Montana Power is now a telecom outfit. They in turn sold out to another conglomerate that was buying up power companies, and they went from having the lowest electrical rates in the nation to the third highest.
Oh, it was, I think it was 60 Minutes did a segment on that last weekend, where the, you know, just before this disaster happened, and it was, they devastated the state.
Oh, yeah. Montana Power for years is a dominant economic force in the state after Anaconda copper mining. And, you know, when the corporations left the state, everybody was left with basically a body without a head. And they were just scrambling around trying to figure out what are we going to do next.
Yeah. Yep. Gary, thanks for the comment.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks.
Yeah, I appreciate your calling. Thank you very much, Gary. So what do we do about this? Well, decentralization. You know, there are voices out there, particularly in the electric power industry, who own a lot of politicians. Got a lot of politicians in their pocket. Our question: what's the real cause of the Northeast blackout? And I'd add to that: and what can we do about it? And I sort of started out by saying, oh yeah, the real cause of this is George Bush. And you know, of course, that is George Bush is part of the problem. And the whole conservative economic mindset is part of the problem. And a bigger part of that is the idea that corporations should be able to own politicians. That's part of the problem. But the real problem is that the system itself has been set up in a way that is incredibly inefficient. When you're losing 10, 15, 20% of your electricity because you're transmitting it over long lines, you have a system that's less than efficient. And so what if we were to have turbines in local communities or even in individual homes that could actually be more efficient than some of the large systems that are in our power plants? And people say, well, wait a minute, you know, then you've got to transport, for example, gas. Well, in a lot of communities, first of all, most of our power plants that have been built recently, or many of our power plants that have been built recently, are running off natural gas. And most homes have, many homes across the United States, have natural gas lines coming into them. So you've already got your power distributed. I mean, when you pump gas over long lines of pipe, there is a certain cost associated with it to maintain the electric motors that keep the gas moving. But the losses are negligible, and the cost is much lower than the cost of pumping electricity. There is a cost to transporting oil for communities that want to generate power with oil. But that cost, particularly in places where you've got to have long lines coming off, is less than the cost of creating electricity. So a lot of communities are looking at this, and they're looking at it really seriously. And this piece in today's journal was fascinating. The groups that are actually doing this, here we've got Equity Office Properties Trust, a company that owns 700 office buildings nationwide, I'm reading here from the journal's article, is installing distributed generation equipment at 12 buildings in and around Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, San Diego, and San Francisco. The devices use natural gas, and they generate 20 to 30% of the building's power needs. A friend of mine in New York, I called him on the day of the power meltdown. He lives in a building down on 28th Street and 8th Avenue,
And his power was on. And I was like, Jerry, your power is on. And he was like, yeah, we generate our own power here in this building. And, in fact, they collect the old newspapers from people every day. And they in part, they burn those things to generate that electricity. So, and they do it because it's cheaper than buying it from the grid. They did this to save money, not for reliability. It's actually cheaper for a building in Manhattan to generate its own electricity. This is a co-op, an owner-owned building, an occupant-owned building. It's cheaper for them to generate their own electricity than to buy it from the grid. And people all over the United States are starting to figure this out. This company, Equity Office Properties Trust, the journal says, but Equity believes it can recover the cost over time, that's the cost of building these generators, by reducing the amount of electricity it has to buy from the grid during times of peak demand, which is when it's most expensive. And they're also using this as a marketing tool. Since last week's blackout, several Equity tenants have inquired about hooking up to the new distributed generation units. Meanwhile, the journal says, General Motors and Dow Chemical are involved in a cutting-edge project. The companies announced in May what they said is the biggest deal to date to install fuel cells, devices that turn hydrogen into electricity. Dow will buy General Motors fuel cells to use at Dow Chemical's largest factory in Freeport, Texas. And initially, each of one of these things is going to generate 75 kilowatts. But down the road, they're looking at generating 35 megawatts, 35 million watts of electricity. The goal over several years is for GM to provide Dow with enough fuel cells to generate 35 megawatts of electricity. And it goes on. DTE Energy, a company, this is actually an energy, a utility in southeastern Michigan. Wall Street Journal today says DTE Energy, whose territory covers southeast Michigan and was darkened by the blackout, has been investing for 8 years in on-site generating equipment, ranging from natural gas-powered engines to turbines to fuel cells. So we're seeing, it's kind of like Back to the Future. I mean, it used to be that companies generated their own electricity way back when. You know, the early Ford plant generated its own electricity. Plants used to, this is one of the reasons that so many plants were built along rivers in the United States. They generated their own power, whether it was pulling mechanical power out of the river or generating electricity or both in these mills all over the United States, all over the Northeast in particular. And now there's this move to, let's go back to this. Why pay the cost of inefficiently, expensively, and in ways that may even cause, you know, environmental problems? The childhood leukemia has been associated with living near power lines, although there's a debate about whether it's the herbicides that they spray to keep down the vegetation or whether it's the radiation, electromagnetic radiation. But you've got all of these costs associated with long-range power transmission. Let's do away with that. Let's just generate power locally. And in addition to that, let's go back to Jimmy Carter's idea of saving energy, which is not even on the radar screen in the Bush Energy Bill. And this is perhaps the most important thing. And again, this gets back to the area where at some point it becomes useful to have both the market and the government involved. Jimmy Carter created the alternative power industry in the United States, and it has really taken off in a lot of European countries by selective use of taxes. And this is done all the time in the United States. We engineer social policy constantly with taxes. We want corporations, for example, to provide health care benefits to employees, or at least we did back in the 1950s. And so back in the 1950s, they passed a law that said that if a corporation wanted to provide health benefits to its employees, it could deduct the cost of that from its taxes. Now, you can't deduct the cost of health insurance from your taxes, but a corporation can. Why? Because they wanted to give them an incentive to buy health insurance for their employees. Similarly, back in the 1950s, back in the 1940s, I believe, they decided that they wanted to encourage people to own their own homes. So they passed legislation that said that you can deduct the interest on your home mortgage. And this led to an explosion of people owning homes. We do social engineering for the good in the United States constantly. And we're continuing to do it. This energy bill that the Bush administration is putting forward offers $18 billion in tax breaks and financial incentives to drill for more oil and to pump more gas and to build more nuclear plants. Now, there's still, I mean, you know, they say, oh, no, we're in favor of the free market. No, they're not. They're still doing social engineering. They're still engineering or manipulating or whatever you want to call it, the direction of corporate behavior by incentives. But they're doing it in a way that says consume more, consume more, consume more, because they're getting their money from these big energy companies and from the fuel sources, the oil industry that provides it for them. And that industry has mind-boggling amounts of money to give to politicians. And the consequence of this is that our energy policy is entirely built on consumption. And or on production and consumption. And if we were to just look at saving energy, I mean, you know, it's the old thing. If our CAFE standards, if the average gas mileage of an automobile across the United States, of the automobile fleets, was reduced by 3%, we would certainly have no need for the energy that we're importing from that they want to drill for in Alaska, and it would dramatically reduce the amount of imported oil that we're using. If we were to make simple changes, I mean, encourage people. Here in Vermont, Louise and I went down to the hardware store the other day. We needed a light bulb. $5 fluorescent bulbs, these bulbs that draw 15 watts, but they produce 60 or 70 watts of light. So it's a 4 or 5-fold savings in energy usage. If you buy one and you fill out this little card, our local energy company, the Green Mountain Power, our local utility, will pay for part of the cost of that light bulb. They're giving us an incentive to save energy. And Carter put this in place, and many of these, I mean, there's a whole thing, and this whole industry blossomed around it, and now it's become much dramatically more efficient. I mean, it was about 5 years ago that I believe it was Sanyo first announced that they were selling roofing shingles that you could put on your house to generate electricity. And now those things have reached the point where the most recent ad that I saw, which I believe was in Home Power magazine, and this was about a year ago, was talking about how now they're up to 10 and 20 year lifespan shingles. And there was just in Science News just a month ago an article about how they've just developed a new technology that wasn't particularly sophisticated. It had to do with how they etched the coatings into the solar cells that gave them a 10-fold increase in efficiency. So we have, if we were simply to say, instead of providing billions of dollars of incentives to the oil and coal industries to produce more, and to the electric industries to produce larger nuclear power plants, and then on top of that, say, and you have to distribute it more, you know, better in a way that's not going to crash. Instead of putting all those literally billions, tens of billions of dollars into that, instead, if we were to say to homeowners, if you buy more efficient appliances, you can deduct it from your taxes. If you can reduce your electric bill, we'll give you some tax benefit for that. I mean, let's just go right to the source of it. Go to manufacturers of products that are always on. These always on products are now consuming. I think the estimate now is something like 10 or 12% of all the electricity in the United States is consumed by things that are actually turned off. A lot of TV sets now. A lot of computers, all kinds of things are always on in kind of a quiet mode, you plug the transformer into the wall and then you turn the device on. Well, that transformer is continuously drawing power, much less power than when the device is on, but it's continuously drawing power. And we just have to set up a system where, gee, if you want to turn your TV on, you can't do the on-off from the remote control. You have to walk over and push the button. Everything else you can do with the remote control. That would be the difference. And it would save millions and millions of watts of electricity across the United States. So, I mean, it's not like there's a shortage of solutions. There's millions of them. You're in the Democracy Zone. Tom Hartman, stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express lawsuit funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
Show.
Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're gonna kill him, okay.
Gonna kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons of mass destruction?
The weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Ugly
weapons. They flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Commitment. An absolute commitment to a common sense program is what I'm suggesting here. Brainshrub makes a great point in our chat room. He says, Tom, I think the true cost of converting to more clean and efficient energy is going to be prohibitively expensive, but we will have to do it. But the true costs are enormous.
And he said, "Don't you're making it sound like it's going to be cheap and easy is misleading." And I agree. We're talking about a major initiative here that is absolutely necessary to preserve any semblance of the American way of life. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. In the last few minutes here of the show, we have Lisa in Santa Fe on the line. Lisa, thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah, hi. I was listening to your thing about the, you know, the appliances being more efficient and things like that.
Right.
And my husband's a builder, and he always is looking for, you know, stuff that's more conservation-minded. And he wanted to put these solar roof tiles on the houses we're building right now, which produce solar electricity during the day, and then you can run it into your meter and you can run them backwards.
Right.
So you can end up with this, you know, the companies owing you money. Well,
yeah.
In New Mexico, the law is that you cannot reverse a meter. So
oh,
you
gee.
Couldn't do it even if you wanted to.
Yeah, this was
see?
A big thing that the utilities were doing about 10 years
yeah.
ago, was
yeah,
proposing
exactly.
these laws. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you can't do it here, so we couldn't do that. And, you know, even if you want to, in many cases, be, you know, conservationally minded, you can't do it anyway.
And see that, Lisa, thanks for pointing that out. That's an example of where you need to get politically active, because the large energy corporations got there ahead of you is what happened. I mean, the utilities went in and they said, you know, we want to have a monopoly on the production of electricity, and if individuals want to compete with us, which is essentially what you and your husband would be doing if you put these things on your roof, you would be competing with the producer of electricity. They said, we're going to make it illegal. And,
yep.
you know, talk about gaming the system. Talk about a, you know, a patronage system of sorts, you know, that threatens the viability of any kind of economic system in the United States. We need the courage to pick up this system and go and move forward, you know, to take our basic human rights and protect them, and our right to live in the society. This very straightforward stuff. Very straightforward stuff. It's time for a new energy policy, and one that actually makes sense in the United States. This is Tom Hartman. Our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and Joe McPherson down in Georgia. It was engineered by Steph Stryker and John Lucas in Detroit. Thank you very much for all your help. And thank you very much for being with us. And we'll see you tomorrow.
From the war against disorder.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.